The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include, nurses want to be deregulated and doctors stand in their way. And U.S. economy adds 916,000 jobs in March. And we'll begin with nurses want to be deregulated. In North Carolina's sharply divided legislature, where few pieces of high-profile legislation received bipartisan support, lawmakers from both parties are backing a bill that proponents say would lower health care costs and remove a layer of bureaucracy. A majority of state lawmakers have signaled their support for the legislation, but key lawmakers whose election campaigns were heavily funded by physicians appear to be holding up the bill. Supporters of the legislation say the bill, which would give more independence to some of the state's most skilled nurses, is stuck in a holding pattern in part because lobbyists and doctors are running the same playbook to fight the bill as they have in previous years. This year's bill, filed more than 3 weeks ago, has yet to be heard in committee, the first of many steps required for it to become law. The slowdown shows how in North Carolina's political system, powerful donors can successfully block a piece of legislation, even when it has widespread support inside the General Assembly. In 2019, for example, former Representative Holly Grange, a Republican from Wilmington, said doctors pressured her to withdraw her support from a nearly identical version of the proposed legislation. I had one of them say, "We've donated to you in the past, and you're not supporting us now," Grange said. I was encouraged to take my name off the bill. If this year's proposal makes its way through the legislature and is signed into law, North Carolina would be one of more than 20 states and the District of Columbia where some advanced practice nurses, many of whom can already prescribe medication and make diagnoses, can practice without supervision. Those who oppose the legislation say it's better for patients when physicians and nurses work together, but many doctors have a financial incentive to keep the law in place. Doing away with the requirement would mean some physicians would no longer receive payments for supervising these nurses. "It's not that there are a lot of folks that are opposed to it," said Dennis Taylor, president of the North Carolina Nurses Association. "It's just the ones that are very vocal and they have very deep pockets. You and I both know it all comes down to money." All nurses and their supporters are asking for, Taylor said, is a fair hearing, debate, and vote on the bill. So far, that hasn't happened. North Carolina law currently requires that nurse practitioners and certified nurse midwives be supervised by a physician. State regulations require that each of these nurses have an agreement with a physician and meet with them every 6 months. Under the legislation, all advanced practice nurses would operate under the oversight of solely the Board of Nursing. Currently, some nurses are overseen by the state's medical board in addition to the nursing board. Some nurses would also be granted prescribing authority as other advanced practice nurses of their same education level currently are. When Grange signed onto the 2019 bill, she started receiving angry and contentious phone calls from doctors who supported her campaign, she said. Grange said she thought both physicians and physician lobbyists also pressured other lawmakers. The reason is because they're going to test the waters to see which legislators they can bend and which ones they can manipulate and threaten, Grange said. The doctors' organizations, they donate a lot of money to the candidates, and the nurses don't necessarily have that amount of resources to do that. Grange refused to take her name off of the bill that year, but the legislation was never heard, debated, or voted on. In a YouTube video posted shortly after this year's legislation was filed, North Carolina Medical Society lobbyist Sue Ann Forrest encouraged members to reach out to your legislators on this issue before the deadline to sign up as a co-sponsor of the bill. Over this weekend and into next week, the bill sponsors will be asking legislators to sign on to this bill to sponsor it, Forrest said. This year, at least five lawmakers signed onto the legislation but later removed their names from the bill, according to legislative records and screenshots of the bill page. The bill proposes independent practice at a time when medical professionals need to be working closer together rather than trying to go it alone, said North Carolina Medical Society CEO Chip Baggett. Cost, quality, and patient satisfaction cannot be addressed separated from everyone else in the medical profession. But nurses haven't been required to meet with supervising physicians every 6 months, as state rules require, since May of last year. A provision in the coronavirus relief package, recently updated and passed by the General Assembly, waived quality improvement meetings for advanced practice nurses. That change was extended through 2022 in the latest version of the legislation. Representative Gail Adcock, a Democrat from Cary who has practiced as a nurse practitioner for 34 years and is a sponsor of the bill, said that's proof physician supervision isn't needed. Adcock also said other states which have passed such legislation have never reversed it because there has been no evidence of significant care problems. For the most part, the bill won't change what most advanced practice nurses can already do. It will allow them to practice the same way they always have, just without supervision, proponents say. It's such a little supervision actually required for these collaborative practice agreements, said Jordan Roberts, a lobbyist for the John Locke Foundation. There's not much supervising required by it, and a lot of these nurses are effectively practicing independently already. This is just an extra layer of cost. A 2015 Duke study found that passing legislation like the SAVE Act would save the state health system anywhere from $433 million to $4.3 billion. Sequithia Peacock, a nurse practitioner who co-owns a practice with a physician in Cary, said the state doesn't need to mandate collaboration. There's enough need for patient care out there that everyone can participate at what level they need to, Peacock said. Not to say that a nurse practitioner doesn't need the collaboration of a physician. It doesn't need to be mandated by law. We do that on a regular basis. Proponents of the legislation said key lawmakers are holding it up, but declined to name them for fear of further jeopardizing the bill from passing. However, the lengthy list of sponsors provides clues. Two of the five chairs of the House Health Committee, one possible starting point for the bill, did not sign on as co-sponsors of the legislation. The three other chairs have signaled their support for the bill, but to bring it up for a hearing or a vote, all chairs have to agree to do so. Representative Kristen Baker is a first-term lawmaker and the only physician in North Carolina's legislature. The Republican from Cabarrus County is one of the chairs of the House Health Committee who did not sign on. Baker's 2020 campaign was heavily funded by doctors and groups representing them. Her campaign received at least $87,000 in 2019 and 2020 from physician-backed committees and physicians who self-reported their occupation in campaign finance records. And one outside group called NC Citizens for Patient Safety, which is heavily funded by medical groups, including the North Carolina Society of Anesthesiologists, Providence Anesthesiology Associates, and U.S. Radiology Specialists, spent $153,000 in advertisements to support Baker during the election. Baker did not respond to emails and a text and declined an in-person request from the News and Observer for comment about the legislation. The other health committee chair, who is not among the bill's 102 sponsors, Representative Larry Potts, a Republican from Davidson County, received some $17,000 from physicians and their committees during the election. Some of those same groups also funded the campaign of Senator Jim Perry, a Republican from Kinston, who is one of three chairs of the Senate Health Committee. Perry, who previously worked in the dental field for 20 years, helping dentists open practices across the country, received at least $40,000 from physicians and physician groups. Reached Monday, Perry said he hadn't had a chance to read the bill, but that stakeholders should work their differences in opinion out among themselves. Perry is the only of the chairs on the Senate Health Committee, another place the bill could receive its first hearing and vote, who is not a sponsor of the legislation. Adcock, who is not a health committee chair, received $23,000 from nursing groups in 2019 and 2020. The five chairs who support the legislation received an estimated $54,000 altogether from advanced practice nurses and nursing groups backed by them. The House version of the bill was most recently sent to the Chamber's Rules Committee, signaling it likely won't go anywhere for a while, former Representative Grange said. Maybe that's just because they don't want to take up something so contentious or controversial, Grange said. It's great legislation. I think it's something that needs to go through. I just don't know that there's an appetite for it. For more North Carolina government and politics news, listen to the Under the Dome Politics podcast from the News and Observer and the NC Insider. Next, lockdown has Toronto businesses at breaking point. Canada's financial capital is in a pandemic lockdown that seems to have no end. Restaurants in Toronto were ordered to close their dining rooms in October as a second wave of COVID-19 was beginning to wash over the city. They haven't been open since. Gyms, nail salons, and barbershops have been shut almost as long. The mayor's hair has grown so thick it's becoming a talking point on Twitter. When spring arrived, there was a glimmer of hope. Restaurants were allowed to set up outdoor patios. Hair salons were told they could open on April 12th. Those plans were canceled on Thursday when Ontario's government invoked a four-week emergency break that tightens restrictions again and extends them across the province of 14.7 million people. Ontario Premier Doug Ford, a Conservative elected in 2018 with strong support from business, pleaded for understanding. The virus left him with no choice, he said. This decision weighs extremely heavy on me, he said. I know what this means for people to be here over a year into this pandemic. It's frustrating and it's very, very difficult. For some business owners, difficult has turned to desperation. They're chafing at the interminable restrictions and the slow pace of Canada's vaccine program. In a national survey of companies released in March, 10% of firms said they could carry on for less than 12 months at current levels of revenue and expenses. Only 13.3% of the Canadian population has received at least one COVID-19 shot. In the U.S., it's about 30%, according to the Bloomberg Vaccine Tracker. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has set a goal of vaccinating every adult by September, and in the meantime, the Canada-U.S. border remains closed to most travelers, threatening airlines, hotels, and tourism businesses with a second barren summer. Next, global stocks rise, Treasury yields rally after jobs report. Stocks rose in many of the markets worldwide that were open on Good Friday, while Treasury yields rallied after a report showed U.S. employers added hundreds of thousands more jobs last month than economists expected. The U.S. bond market closed early after a holiday-shortened session that saw the yield on the 10-year Treasury climb to 1.72% from 1.68% late Thursday. It's been rising sharply this year on expectations that a supercharged economic recovery and higher inflation are on the way due to COVID-19 vaccinations and massive spending by the U.S. government. The yield began the year close to 0.9%. In Asia, stocks in Tokyo, Seoul, and Shanghai all rose a day after the S&P 500 passed the 4,000-point level for the first time. Many major stock markets were closed in observance of Good Friday, including in New York and much of Europe. Futures for U.S. stock indices rose, suggesting the S&P 500 may add to its record when trading resumes on Monday. Friday morning's U.S. jobs report was highly anticipated, and investors hoped it would show their expectations for a strong economic recovery were warranted. Hiring blew past expectations, with employers adding 916,000 more jobs than they cut last month. Economists had forecast growth of 617,500. It was nearly double the jobs growth from February, and it was the strongest since August. The data helped the S&P 500 futures climb 0.4%. following the 1.2% rise for the index on Thursday to an all-time high. Futures for the Dow Jones Industrial Average and NASDAQ 100 also climbed. This is about as clear as it gets. The reopening is happening faster than nearly anyone expected, Ryan Dietrich, chief market strategist for LPL Financial, said in a statement. He also pointed to how the U.S. government said hiring in January and February was stronger than earlier estimated. The numbers reassured investors that a sustained recovery appears to be taking root as more people get vaccinated and businesses reopen. So, too, did a corner of the jobs report showing workers' wages aren't jumping yet, even as hiring accelerates. Average hourly earnings dipped 0.1% in March from a month earlier on a seasonally adjusted basis. While that's frustrating for workers, it encourages investors who had worried that a burst of inflation may be on the way. If inflation were to shoot higher and remain there, it would likely send Treasury yields spiking even higher. Higher interest rates make investors less willing to pay high prices for stocks, particularly those seen as the most expensive. They also hurt stocks of companies, asking investors to wait many years for big profit growth to come to fruition. Such worries have hurt the momentum for big technology stocks, in particular this year. Helping to counterbalance such concerns in the stock market this year has been immense spending by the U.S. government, which investors expect to help boost corporate profits. President Joe Biden unveiled details of his latest push earlier this week, a $2.3 trillion plan to shore up the nation's infrastructure. In Asia, Tokyo's Nikkei 225 index gained 1.6% to 29,854 on Friday. The Kospi in South Korea added 0.8% to 3,112.8, and stocks in Shanghai picked up 0.5% to 3,484.39. Next, some businesses want masks kept on, even as states drop mandates. Although Texas no longer requires people to wear masks to protect against COVID-19, customers do need them to enter DJ Lozada's store. "We cannot afford to take chances with the lives of my staffers. They're young people and their parents have entrusted me with their care," said Lozada, owner of Soul Popped Gourmet Popcorn, a shop located in Austin's Barton Creek Square Mall. Lozada is also concerned about her 85-year-old father, who will return to his part-time job in the store this month. She has a staffer stationed at the door to her shop who will tell anyone without a mask they cannot enter. 18 states currently have no mask requirements, including some that have never made face coverings mandatory. Texas Governor Greg Abbott lifted his state's mask mandate on March 2nd, and Indiana expects to end its mandate on Tuesday. But many business owners like Lozada are keeping their own rules in place, requiring staffers and customers alike to wear masks for the sake of protecting everybody, particularly their employees. And the law is on the owner's side. A company's premises are private property, so owners can insist that customers wear masks, just as restaurants can require that diners wear shoes and shirts in order to be served, said Michael Jones, an attorney with the law firm Eckert, Siemens in Philadelphia. Store owners, business owners, have the absolute right to require customers, vendors, anyone who comes onto their property to wear a mask, Jones says. It's legal as long as owners don't enforce their requirements in a discriminatory way, he said. If a customer enters a store without a mask, is asked to leave, and doesn't, that could be trespassing under the law. Lozada said that she would call 911 if faced with that situation. Most retail chains require employees and customers to wear masks. One exception, Foot Locker, says each store is following the requirements of the state where it's located. Employers have an obligation under federal law and some state laws to provide a safe workplace for their employees, and that can include requiring everyone on the premises to wear masks. In the COVID-19 section of its website, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration notes that employers are required to have a workplace free from recognized hazards that are causing or are likely to cause death or serious physical harm. When employees at Interplast Group question why they have to wear masks, managers at that plastic products manufacturer can point to the law, said Brenda Wilson, Senior Director of Human Resources and Communications of the Livingston, New Jersey-based company that has facilities in 22 states. At this point, masks to protect against COVID-19 are as important as the eye and ear protection that factory workers must wear. But she says Interplast customers also need to be protected. They are depending on us to get the products out. If we have an outbreak and that results in losing manufacturing capacity, then no one's going to win, Wilson said. Many employees want their bosses to require masks. The 16 massage therapists who work for Amber Briggle cannot maintain the recommended 6-foot distance from their clients and still do their work. She requires masks for everyone at her 2 Soma massage locations in Denton, Texas. She told her customers in a blog post, "These same masks have kept all of us healthy since we reopened in May. We haven't had a single COVID case transmitted here, despite the thousands of people we've seen." When some clients objected, saying they wanted to be more comfortable and weren't worried about safety, Briggle has stood firm. "I've told them you can put your mask on or you can leave," and they'd leave. "We offer them a mask and they'd leave," she said. But requiring masks has brought Briggle new customers, including some who canceled membership at spas where masks are not required. Even with masks, Briggle and her staff have had 3 COVID-19 scares when clients called after appointments to say they had tested positive for the virus. And next, GameStop to sell 3.5 million shares after stock frenzy. 2 months after a market phenomenon took shares of GameStop to the moon, the video game retailer said Monday that it will sell up to 3.5 million of its shares. The shares will be sold through an at-the-market offering, which lets companies place their stock on the market over a period of time. The announcement sent shares of GameStop up 850% this year, down 8% at the opening bell. The GameStop saga has been one of the biggest stories on Wall Street this year. The company has been pummeled as new technology allowed people to download games rather than buying a physical copy from GameStop or somewhere else. That shift threatened the existence of GameStop, and its shares had been more than halved to $20 each by the start of this year. A number of hedge funds, believing the value of GameStop shares would fall further, shorted the company or bet against its shares. However, a group of smaller investors who communicated largely on Reddit challenged those hedge funds, believing they were wrong or that they could catch them in a short squeeze. To a short stock, an investor borrows shares at the current price for a fee and then buys them back at a later date. If the shares fall, the investors pocket the difference. If it rises, it can lead to massive losses because the borrowed stock is now worth more than was paid for it, and the investor must pay the difference. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Again, that is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.